Yes, there's a natural mystic blowing in the air. Always a natural mystic. Good afternoon, folks. You're live on Caribbean Radio Show with your host, Connie, from Jamaica. How is it going with everybody today? It's very cloudy out here, but I like this kind of weather because it keeps the place very, very cool. Lots of things have been happening. For the past week, we have had so much things going on with racism and all of that, that we tend to forget about the virus. The virus has climbed, but not, but we have been controlling it, having it under control, and the borders are being opened. We'll have tourists coming in and all of that. So I just want to remind everybody to ensure that you do the proper things. Wash your hands, wear your mask, wash hands at all times. Please change your clothes when you get in from off the road. Take off your shoes, your bags, your glasses. You clean them. You leave them in a box at the door. You have them cleaned, and you try to keep your children safe. A few children have gone out to school. Those who are doing, namely the exams, the CXC exams, and the young ones who are off to high school. So we just, as parents, family, friends, we just have to encourage them to do the proper thing. Always remember to keep themselves clean, the hands clean, keep your hands out of your face, keep it from your mouth and your eyes especially too. Now, I went out on the road today to look at our roads, and I have with me this week a very special guest who will come on shortly to tell us about his career as an engineer. He's a young, brilliant man from Howard University, and he's working in Jamaica, thank God. Most of our young people tend to leave. When they leave university, and even if they go on to specialize, they don't ever come back to stay. Three of them are here. We have our doctors, lawyers, engineers, and to name a few. They are here with us, and they are doing a wonderful job. I just want to big up Caribbean Radio Show for having this these shows every day. Caribbean Radio Show, as you know, is the knowledge station, always giving you knowledge. And their numbers are 661-467-2407. Whenever you want to speak, you have to press 1, but you can tune in and listen. Now, each week we have these shows, and I just want to give thanks to all my listeners, friends, and family who continue to support the group. Special thanks to Dr. Ev for always being there, helping and trying to promote education each week by doing her prompting for us to make contributions to palace1.org. She will come on later to tell you all about it. Today, my guest will be a young, dynamic engineer from Jamaica. His name is Christopher Henry, and he'll be with us shortly as soon as he presses one to talk. Welcome, Christopher. If you're there, I'm going to welcome you. You press one to talk. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Christopher. How are you? Welcome to Caribbean Radio Show.
I am fine, you know. Thank you for having me on the show.
Okay, as you know, this is... Okay, great. As you know, this is the Knowledge Station, and we want to get as much knowledge to push out to our listeners out there, because there are times when we don't know stuff, and we learn a lot from our viewers, our listeners, and our guests that we invite weekly. How are you today?
I'm fine, you know. I'm here just relaxing today. As you
yes.
say, today is a rather cloudy day, and I like the weather like that as well. So I've been just here
yeah.
relaxing with my family.
Okay. So, Christopher, as I know, you are an engineer, a civil engineer. Would you like to tell us about where you started? What high school did you go attend, and how you decided that you wanted to become an engineer? Tell me about you a little bit about the high school and when you started your dream.
All right. Well, to be honest with you, I'm from Highgate, St. Mary's, small district in St. Mary's. I always had an ambition to go to art school. And I took my common entrance at the time. It was 1998, and I was accepted to Arden High School based on my performance. And so I attended Arden High School for 5 years, where I did a combination of all the subjects. But I was more inclined to the sciences. So, you know, typically that leads you down a path to engineering, being a doctor, etc. So the foundations were laid from Arden High School, and I then matriculated to go to Howard University in 2005. And then
okay.
I always knew I wanted to be an engineer, but I didn't know what specific type of engineer I was. As you know, there are many different disciplines within the engineering field. So it was upon really going to Howard University and just being exposed to all of the options that I selected a civil engineer because of the impact that it really has on society. Every day, all aspects of society. Right.
Okay, great. So how did you feel when you found out that you were actually accepted at Howard University? It must have been a very exhilarating experience.
Well, definitely. Of course, it definitely. Because Howard University is one of the leading black institutions in the world, I would say. And
it's a prestigious college.
Yes, man. It really is. And it has a lot of tradition and history behind it. Quite a few very excellent Jamaicans are past students of our university. So I was very proud to be a part of that whole tradition, that the connection that Jamaica has with Howard University.
Okay. Was it difficult for you to get into that university?
No, it wasn't difficult. It's really based on your performance. So I'm a message to all of this to the youngsters out there would be just to focus on meeting the requirements and focus on preparing. I think it's still SAT and preparing an SAT to get that test. So it wasn't difficult to you. As long as I said, there's been a long history of Jamaica getting accepted to Howard University.
Okay. And you didn't have to apply for a scholarship or anything like that, did you?
Well, no, you do. Because as a Jamaican, you know, the school fees, the reduction of school fees, you're not privy to that as a being a Jamaican. So you definitely have to apply for scholarship from various places.
Oh. Okay. So how did you coming from an environment, a laid back environment like Jamaica, how did you find it when you just went off to university? How was it for you? How did you integrate, we know, meeting other children, other people from different society, different walks of life, different backgrounds? How did you manage? How did you feel at first?
Well, it was a bit of a challenge at first, definitely, being alone in a relatively big city, Washington, D.C., a city that has so much culture and so many different places that you can visit. And
yes.
So it was a little bit difficult at first, but to be honest with you, I've always been someone that is adaptable and I can make friends easily, I think. So it was really just me being myself ultimately at the end of the day. I was able to gain a few friends, many of which I'm still connected to. It became a lot easier as the time went along. And then again, you know, we're there to do schoolwork. So the engineering program is a very demanding one. So a lot of the time, you have to be really inside of your book.
You miss home?
Oh, of course. Every day. Used to miss the jerk chicken on a Friday evening. Miss Jamaican KFC. Yeah, and you know, just
what kind of food did you enjoy there?
Well, if I must be honest with you, as a college student, most of what you had was McDonald's every day. But I don't miss that.
Great. So tell me something. Did you meet other Jamaicans there as well?
Yes, man. Quite a few Jamaicans. And funny enough, in my civil engineering program, there were three Jamaicans in the program. Myself and another gentleman who actually went to Arden High School as well, and another young lady doing the civil engineering program. And, you know, we just grouped together and made sure that everybody was covered from an academic standpoint. We didn't leave anybody behind, so that was good. I think it would have been more difficult without those.
You get to come home to Jamaica?
How often?
Yes, while you were away.
Well, typically, I mean, most Christmas I would like to be in Jamaica.
Okay.
Summers, whenever I got a chance, because I did a lot of extra credit work during the summer, so I used to come home on some occasions for the summer.
So I've been very happy to see you and all your family and friends out here.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so at what point did you decide that you wanted to do civil engineering? What point
in
the...
in the thing? Well, it really are. When the first week that you enter Howard University, you're exposed to all of the different curriculum that exists. So quite honestly,
okay.
I got accepted to do mechanical engineering there. But when I went into the engineering department for the first time and, you know, just kind of just looking closer at the options that are there, I saw civil engineering as something as being a little bit more impactful, more exciting.
I must
civil engineering is really the development of infrastructure that human beings interact with on a daily basis. Roads, buildings, you know, traffic lights, etc.
Okay.
Water supply. So it's a lot more impactful.
We're going to get to that shortly. I just want to take a small break and to remind our listeners that I'm speaking to Christopher Henry, and he's a civil engineer. He's a Jamaican, a very brilliant young man, and he has done a lot of good for this country. He has done a whole lot of good. And when things like this happen, I really, really want to big them up, big up our young people and encourage them, because they might be doing something and be thinking that they are not hitting it. You know, they are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, or they're not doing such a wonderful job. But we on the outside can see, and I've heard comments, and I must pass them on to you what I've heard so far. So back to you now, Christopher. It is said, you know, all over, because we know for a fact that about the roads that you have built and designed or supervised. Tell us a little about that. Where you worked and how did you get into doing roads?
Okay, all right. So upon graduation, coming back to Jamaica after graduating from school, the first job that I got was with the National Works Agency in Kingston. And to be quite honest with you, as a young engineer, young civil engineer, one of the best places for you to go would be the National Works Agency. It is really it's a university after university, to be honest with you. I can't tell it to youngsters like this. What you learn in school is only one part of the journey. Really, after you've graduated and really started your formal training as an engineer now, that is where you will learn most of the lessons that you will carry through your career. So NWA was the first job that I got at 23 years old. And so NWA manages all of the main road networks for the country. Designs, builds, maintains. So I would have been exposed to all of the various tasks and activities involved with road construction and management. So the first road that I got involved with as part of the design, because that's where I started the design of roads and road infrastructure, was in a section of Jamaica called Belmont in Westmoreland. We did 13 kilometers of road from Scotts Cove, which is the border of St. Elizabeth and Westmoreland, to an area called Ferris Cross. In Westmoreland as well. So it was a rural road, but you know, we brought it up to our international standard. And I mean, persons from that area who listen to the show, they can attest to that. It was a very good road. And from that, I gained a lot of experience from that. That was my first project. And then after that, I moved on to an area of Jamaica called Soursop Turn in Clarendon. So we did 12 kilometers of road from Soursop Turn to Chapleton in Clarendon. And to be honest with you, that was the first time I would have been going to that area in my life. So, and it was amazing to me to see the different types of persons and the amount of persons that live in that area. So we did a very good road there. I think that it has positively impacted that community every day since.
Okay, good. tell me something, not to interrupt your train of thought. When you go out to the country, I've actually been on the Blue, that's the road, the first one you mentioned, was that the road leading to Bluefields Beach?
Yes.
A beautiful piece of road, I might say. Absolutely beautiful. The other place I don't know. But what I want to ask you is this. How is the crime rate there? Like, you know, usually when persons have road doing and they know that this one in charge of this project or the other one, they, some guys will crawl out of the woodworks and say they want job. Because working with National Works Agency, I would imagine that you have a team of people to work with. They have their workers. So how is it with people from the community? Do you find that people come up and want work to do on the road? Or why?
Well, yes, of course, definitely. And to be fair, as a when you're doing these roads, all persons involved, whether it's the government or the contractors who carry out the actual work, part of the whole, what would you say now, the whole, one of the components of the road work is really providing community involvement, because at the end of the day, it's the community who use the roadways. So it, when a road project is coming through, it is really part and parcel of the whole thing, that persons in the community get work. Now, as you say, you will find the other person trying to use a different kind of method to get work. But typically the work assignment or work in the community goes through the political directorate, whether the councillor, the caretaker, MP, etc. So typically that's already arranged with the political branch in the area. But people in the community must get work. It is a part of it. If you think about it logically, it's their product at the end of the day. So it's good that they should be involved with it, with the development.
So you have troublemakers who will want to bring in politics and say they want work and bring the bad man business, because not your, not talking about yours necessarily, but I've heard about people fuss on the road with people. Even the last road that I saw them building, I take my ears, I heard them cussing and fussing about politics and who getting work and fear, and they want the work and they demand the work from the poor people. And, you know, it's like,
well,
they're caught between.
Yeah, it's true. It happens. But, you know, all right, I would tell you, to be honest, it has happened more than one time on projects that I've done. Because, I mean, I also worked on the Fern Gully project. That is where we widened Fern Gully Road a bit and also changed the road surface to concrete. There was a big major labor dispute there one time, and it was about politics. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think the community members and even the persons who caused those flare-ups, they come to a realization that what we're doing is really for them, and it will benefit them at the end of the day. So it, even though those things happen after a while, they kind of tend to go away. So,
really, it's such a beautiful stretch of road. That is before we had the pay road, the toll road. It's such a beautiful area to drive in, you know, because it's a part of tourist attraction. Really, absolutely beautiful. So persons need to be educated as well and know that all of these roads that we are enjoying now, it doesn't only benefit us as people going about. It also facilitates easy movement from point A to point B, because prior to this, we had to go all over driving on treacherous roads and hills and trees to get to where we want to go, you know? So it has really, really helped, you know, and I'm very proud of all of this activity here that I see going on. I'm going to take a break to go to the lines, because I see the lines are lighting up. So there's one from Jamaica, which I would like to 6404, you're live on Caribbean Radio Show. Press 1 to talk. Good afternoon, caller 404. 876-404, good afternoon. You're live on Caribbean Radio Show. Hello, good afternoon.
Calvin Sutherland.
Hello, good afternoon. You're live on Caribbean Radio Show.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Pleasant Sunday afternoon to you.
A pleasant one to you. I guess you have been listening. I notice you have been listening. We have with us young Christopher Henry, and he's our civil engineer, and he has been telling us about the roadworks and all of that. So you can always ask him questions, or you could stay tuned and join us, you know. So.
Well, I've been listening and enjoying the fact that there's this young man who has been adding to the road infrastructure in Jamaica. And as you said, Connie, it's really good roads, and I listen for now, and then I'll ask the question as they do arise. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you for joining us. Keep listening.
Okay.
There's another caller, 202-706. Thank you for calling live at Caribbean Radio Show. What's on your mind?
Yes, good afternoon. I mean, first of all, lots of background noise. I'm sorry to say that. Coming from your mic. But
my computer has been down. Sorry.
Congratulations to the young man. It does my heart really, really proud to hear, you know, young Jamaicans doing all of these great jobs. The question I have for him, though, is it seems that the Chinese are there in Jamaica doing a massive amount of expansion in the road. How does your company, is there a coordination between your company and the Chinese, and how does that affect Jamaica and the roads that are there right now?
Hello? Right. Okay. So.
That question was directed at you, Chris.
Yes. Okay. So, all right. So, the answer to that is the Chinese were engaged by the government to assist in the, or to provide loans really to help in the loans as well as the physical effort to help in the development of our roadways. And I would say the Chinese, they've been doing a good job thus far, because a lot of these projects, the government had them earmarked for many years now, and they were never able to get the funding to get them done. And the Chinese allowed us to do that. So I'm just speaking selfishly from a road builder point of view. Now, in terms of the coordination, the management of the Chinese is really mostly done from through the NWA. So designs are done a lot of times by the NWA and implemented by the Chinese, or vice versa. But there is that communication that exists and coordination between the NWA and the Chinese company that are carrying out the work. So to answer your question, there is a lot of coordination. A lot of times persons would say that there isn't any coordination, but I can assure you there is. There is a lot of planning that goes behind these projects.
Well, next question. Looking forward, I know when roads are being built, the
I'm not hearing it so well.
I said when roads are being built, the topography of a particular area will change because of these roads going through. What preservation is there to preserve certain situation in Jamaica, like parts of particular area for?
I didn't hear anything after preserve.
I was saying what is done. Normally, when a road is built, the topography is being disturbed somewhat. Since we are on an island, is there some kind? There's a lot of roads that is being built, a lot of areas that is being drilled into. Is there any kind of a shift, or will this have any impact on weather and hurricane and earthquake later on, because there's a massive amount of building and changing of the structure in terms of road in Jamaica. Is there any impact that you know of geologically that would be seen down the line?
Well, all right. There must be some impact. But whenever we carry out do any road infrastructure project, as I would have said previously, there's a lot of planning. So we do what we call road impact assessments for all of these projects before we carry them out. Just to ascertain whatever impact it's gonna have after the development. And we ensure that measures are in place to mitigate against these things happening. Now, there is not everything, every act of God that we can mitigate against, but certainly we take these into consideration when designing the road. So we try as best as we can to minimize the impact that the development will have. But there are impacts.
Wow, that is so really good to know that, first of all, I know this is changing the landscape of Jamaica. I haven't been to Jamaica in a long time. And what I've heard...
You'd be surprised at what it looks like.
Pardon me?
I said you'd be very surprised to see what it looks like.
That's what I'm saying. Congratulations. Before I go, I would like for you, have no idea what a civil engineer does. So if you could just delve into it so my young child who's listening right now will have an idea what a civil engineer does, and maybe can imitate exactly what you're doing.
Well, I mean, simply put, really a civil engineer, and it comes from the word civil. A civil engineer really is involved with the design and construction of infrastructure that the general population has to interface with. So, as we said, we speak about roads, we speak about the supply of water to houses, we speak about the management of sewer from residents and properties and communities. So civil engineering is really the design and construction of infrastructure to support society. And
thank you.
Those were great questions, very great, because for persons who want to consider a career in being an engineer, you know, you have different types of engineer. Some of the different types are like mechanical engineer, civil engineer. Tell us more, Chris, about the different types of engineers there are, since caller.
You have all types of engineers. I've even heard the other day you have sanitation engineers, like house cleaners. So everybody really can be an engineer. But you have the major ones are electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, civil engineers. You have quite a few. But those are the major ones.
All that you learn on the jobs. Did you have to ever do courses overseas, like interchange with the Chinese or Japanese or Canadian company, American company, or whoever to work here or there?
Well, yes. I mean, one good experience that I got was through the NWA. I did a 3-month course in Japan in bridge construction, design, and management. So, I mean, the Japanese, they work very closely with Jamaica. They provide a lot of technical support. And, you know, basically general upliftment of local engineers.
So tell us a little bit about what happened in Japan while you were on that course. How did you find the language? Was there a language barrier or what? Did you learn anything?
Yeah, I mean, I learned basic Japanese. And, you know, but yeah, there was a definite language barrier, but because the course that I did, there were participants from maybe 17 different countries in the world, from Papua New Guinea, Thailand, Tanzania, Zambia. Persons also from Togo, Myanmar, many different places. So there were just language barriers all around. But I think that everybody really had a common goal, and I mean, one message from it is that once persons have a common goal and understand it, they find ways to communicate. So.
Oh, that's so true. So tell us about the
May
food.
I
how did you
question?
Go ahead.
Konnichiwa, Mr. Christopher.
Konnichiwa.
Tell me something. The Flatbridge is one of those phenomenal feats of engineer, and it has been a problem, taking many lives. Historically, that has been there maybe from the 1300s. Tell us a little bit about Flatbridge and if there's anything that can be done to safeguard the water coming over and safeguard of life, loss of life during floods.
I mean, I couldn't tell you much about Flatbridge, really. But what I do know, there is always a way to prevent fatalities from happening on the road. But it's just the level of investment that may be necessary to carry out that solution in 2020. But definitely there are solutions for everything.
Mm-hmm.
That
you
is,
think
they
wanted to
put on the bridge? They have tried many things.
And but definitely there is a solution. I'm not sure if the government of the day is prepared to carry out the level of investment that's necessary. But there are things that can be done.
Okay.
Do you think they wanted to have it as a historical site and they really want to preserve it? Why they decided to do a toll around the road? Because driving on the toll, you can look down and see the landmark. You know when you're driving on the river road, you know when you exit Spanish Town and coming around, you can see the lay of the land and how it curves. You know, you actually know that there's something going on, and it's the flat bridge down there. So I've heard that they have tried, but I think they want to preserve the whole riverbed area, the whole area. It's nice, tourist attraction. So tell me something now. Back to school at Howard University. With all of these things that's happening now with the racial slurs and the prejudices and everything, you didn't experience anything while you were at university, did you?
No, not too many. It's a historical black college and university. There you are taught about black empowerment, black solidarity. We learned about things like that in English class. So What I can say, though, is that Howard University definitely prepared a young black person to be doing exactly what we're seeing here now, standing up for your rights and really getting your point out there. Howard University is very well known for activism, so they definitely would have a big part to play in what's happening in the USA right now, a positive part.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. Very, very happy to hear that, you know. So, very, very happy because it's a wild thing that's happening now, really terrible things we're experiencing here of late. This year has been good, you know. So tell me something. While we're on the subject of the road, I have to get back to the subject of the road. As I said before, I'm blaming you because the roads have given the places everywhere a magnificent look, a very, very good look, and a very actually a list. Tell us about the project that you worked on in Barbican, because that was a horrible one. In Barbican, we used to take like 2 hours. You have to leave before a day to go to an office in Kingston or to move out from the area. It Jackson Manor Park, it was really, really horrible going before all of this came about. The road construction and reconstruction and everything, like Fontana, Lesouche, and it is a vast, it makes a vast difference what's happening there now. Tell us a little bit about that project.
Well, the Barbican Road, the Barbican Road generally take most of the traffic that is traveling east to west in Kingston. Very, very, very heavily traffic, as Barbican Road connects quite a few residential communities. So it has generally been under stress from a traffic point of view. And it has always been very difficult to manage the traffic in that area. But previously the road was a dual carriageway. Not a dual carriageway. It was a single lane heading in either direction. But what we would have done now is expanded the capacity of the roadway to dual lanes on either side, two lanes on either side, creating turning lanes at the various intersections. As in Barbican Road, you have five major intersections, and those were the major points of congestion within that area. And as you said, morning through to evening, it would be congested with traffic. So we did those designs to manage the expected capacity. We even applied growth factors to that for projected capacity. And we built the road, and I can say the Chinese built the road, and I can say now that that road has been a success. I experience no traffic driving through Barbican now, and I would say that most persons will agree with me that it was fundamentally a successful project.
Drive on your road, and you know that this is something that you had a hand in. This is something that you had to supervise from start to finish, from before from the get go, from you put pen to paper. How do you feel now? Know that you're on it, and each time you're driving it. Is there anything that you see that you could have done differently or correct or whatever, apart from the flow of the traffic?
Of course. I mean, one thing. One message that I can even pass on to the young engineers is that you must always be the biggest critic of the work that you do. I mean, you're going to get criticism from many outside parts, but if you are the biggest critic of your work, then you probably won't feel so bad about it. But definitely, every day I drive it, there's going to be something that you see that should have been done better, could have been done differently. But I think you can't beat up yourself about that all the time, but as long as you deliver a good product to the people, because that's really what you do for the public.
We had the opening, you know, I remember the Prime Minister and everybody was there, you know, to talk about it and to congratulate you, and they had it up in the paper and all of that. Also, the roads around Kingston all over are very nice. The ones in Manor Park as well. Yeah, and have you been down on the one on the Hadley Park Road? Did you have anything to do with any of those?
Well, I worked on the Hadley Park Road for 6 months. 6 months. I was involved in this project in the 3 miles area. And that road is has made a humongous difference in terms of the traffic coming in from Portmore, going back to Portmore. So that's also a very impactful project as well. Also done by the Chinese.
I am so very proud of you. You seem to have a good relationship with all parties involved, and I am proud of you as a young person to achieve so much, you know, that, you know, much. The you guys seem to hit it nail on the head, you know. We're hoping that our roads will stay intact because the problem we experience with rains. When the rains fall, you get inferior road work, and then you have people coming to patch the road. What is the cause of all of that?
Well, quite honestly, in many cases, it is poor workmanship in many cases. And also, it's like an unforeseen, because one of the key things to know about roads is that there is a lot of infrastructure that runs beneath these roads.
Computer.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, I'm hearing you.
Yes, there's a lot of infrastructure that runs beneath these roads. Water pipes, sewer pipes, etc. The data infrastructure. And from time to time, these services get ruptured and ultimately it damages the roadways. But I would say for the most part, poor workmanship is the cause of why many of these roads don't stand up to the rain.
Oh, but we have learned a lot today about road. I didn't even remember anything about the infrastructure of underground. That is very important. Because what happens is that our water runs underground, like you have a bridge and all of that. And that is so important because sometimes when you see some roads, because they don't have proper drainage, you find a lot of backup and all of that going on. I like the way how you guys have structured the road in such a way that you have law and order. It's more like you have to go up one way and you have to do it you can't break the law, you can't spin around and all of that because, you know, the taxis are mainly culprits for doing that. And some of the buses, I noticed where they have even prosecuted a bus driver in the first instance for doing that in the early stages. Also, the stop lights that you have and allowing for pedestrians to cross, I'm very proud of that. What word of advice would you give to our youngsters coming up when choosing a career path?
Yes, okay, that's a very important one. The major advice I would give to persons is that, well, two things really. Try to select something that you are passionate about, that you have some kind of love for. Because at the end of the day, when it is like that, it doesn't really appear as if it's work or it's arduous or difficult. So try to find something that you're passionate about, something that you like. And then the other major thing is that really there is no substitute for hard work. Nobody who you see at any point in their career, they didn't get here because of luck. They really got there because of hard work. So that is one of the major advice that I can give to young promising students coming up now. So Jamaica has quite a bit of potential. Just need to be honest and work on properly, and you will achieve.
Yeah. But of course, I just want to say very many thanks for coming to be my guest this afternoon. And despite the little distractions and the feedback, I really, really appreciate it. And we have learned a lot, and I hope my listeners have learned a lot. We are on the Caribbean Radio Show, listeners, remember. And we learned, and we have learned a lot, I must say. But before you go, I would like to invite Dr. Ev to have a little chat about our scholarship program we have going for young people. Dr. Ev, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon.
Welcome, Dr.
Welcome. Thank you so much again for inviting me in. Just listening to this young man is one of the reasons why we at TRS Radio Show, Caribbean Radio Show, The Knowledge Station, and Palace1.org are just fighting away, plowing away with scholarships in order to help the brilliant minds of Jamaica. I mean, I wish when I was in Jamaica I was half as brilliant. Now these young kids are just kind of super. I'm not sure if it's the yam, the breadfruit, or the banana, or whatever it is, but you guys are just absolutely wonderful. The only thing that we're lacking is resources and finance. Before I talk about Palace, I'm going to be just spending a little moment to talk about one brilliant young physician to be coming up. We have, just like how we hear about Christopher, this little 24, well, he's about 25 now, so would have finished his MD, but because of the lack of resources, again, kind of put it, stab you in the back right there and then, right in the middle of his last and final year to serve the country. He is out of money. He is not able to finance the rest of his career. And that is such a travesty. This is where we have Palace One coming in. PalaceOne.org, founded by Mr. Rula Brown. Want to big up Mr. Rula Brown. 10 years, this would be the 10th year. So far, 691 scholarships is being handed out to high school students as well as university students going into higher education. The scholarships are not a humongous amount of money. As a matter of fact, just a little tip in the market because we don't have foundations, we don't have big cooperation giving endowment or anything like that. We do get small, very small amount of donation from our listeners. And so in order to make things stretch a little bit, we just give a little small scholarship. That does help a hell of a lot, because if it were not for so, a lot of students would not even have made it through. And I can tell you stories of so many students who, because of Palace, kind of were able to push through the years of their university student as a student. So, guys, if you're out there and you're listening, please go to the website. You'll hear, you'll have every single year in photographs of all of the ceremonies that is kept normally at the Pegasus Hotel in August. Unfortunately, this year we will not have a ceremony. We'll not be handing out scholarship because the founder, Mr. Rula Brown, his dear wife passed away. Supposed to be having a funeral on Monday, this Monday coming up, and that kind of just totally disrupts everything that we had planned, because this year was supposed to be the gala year. It was supposed to be the 10th year, and so much things were planned. But, of course, life took another course. We are, however, gearing up for a 10th year, which would be the 11th year, and with our forces trying to get funds in, maybe we will make up in that we'll be able to double the scholarship we normally give, normally around 90 to 100 scholarship. So, folks, please go to the website, www.palace1.org. That's palace1.org. The acronym stands for Peace and Love Academic Scholarship. And unfortunately, this scholarship was birthed from the very horrific death of a young listener that usually listens to the program. This young girl was murdered and decapitated in Spanish over their waters. Her body was found behind the post office over forget one of the waters, somewhere over there. Over the port. Yes, yes, that's exactly. So out of that, we decided we were going to honor her. And so the Peace and Love Academic Scholarship was born. The first year, 13 scholarships were given. To date, 691 scholarships were is on the table. We were planning to bring that up to about 900 this time around, but we'll do that next year. So this is why I'm asking you guys who are listening in, please go to the site, www.palas1.org. That's www.palas1.org. And if you have a big corporation in Jamaica, just as you hear Mr. Christopher so elegantly spoke about civil engineer and the work that we are, that he's doing on the road, we have Maurice, who is sitting in the doorway, just getting, want to get a couple of $1,000 in to pay that school fee in order to finish. And especially in this time of COVID-19, where we need physicians, where we need professional healthcare workers, no better time to reach out to him. We have set up a GoFundMe page. It's doing well. We have about $3,095 there already. However, this young man is owing for the entire last year semester, which in Jamaica, let me quote you, in U.S. dollars, is $14,000, $15,000 by now, because every month it is accruing a late fee. So it's about $15,000. For him to go back and finish his final year, it's about $23,000. So the GoFundMe page is asking for $38,000. So far, we're doing excellent. We just started 4 or 5 days ago, and we're up to $3,000, almost $4,000. So for those of you who are not able to donate, and I know how difficult that can be sometimes, especially in this time, please share the page. Please share the page. And to be honest with you, when we talk about sometimes we don't have, somebody said to me on one of the response back from the page, Dutty Tough. Yeah, Dutty Tough, I understand. But 1-1 Coco also full of basket. So if you put in dollars, we're not talking about necessarily $1,000, $2,000, $10,000, those, that would be exciting. But if everybody put in 50 cents or $1, they do add up, more than add up. You know, we're talking about pulling out the numbers rather than the big ones, you know. So if everybody get a hand in this, we don't know how our life would be impacted by these young people. We're talking about driving on roads in Jamaica that Christopher builds. Come on. Not somebody from other country, but Christopher. And those of you who are out there may know Christopher. Like, boy, Christopher built this abuse of road. Yeah, you know how powerful that is to know that we can connect our things to our people. So, folks, I mean, we're encouraged by the brilliance of our young people, but we also have to stand behind them. And whatever we can do, I mean, in terms of encouragement, or I would say full encouragement, because you don't want to hand it. I mean, full encouragement, and really stand up beside them and behind them and before them. Whatever you can do in order to support them. And in supporting them, we're supporting our country. We are selfishly making sure that we ourselves have good road. We cannot drop in a pothole. We cannot wash over Pandip Gully Bank when the water comes down. And the beauty of seeing a piece of nylon road or a piece of concrete road, and when the car wheels them just like glide over it, especially if you're going for that beautiful drive on a Sunday, just taking in the sunshine, the moonshine when it be, the trees and the breezes. It is absolutely wonderful when you know, say, I see your people them, your own people them, Billy. So thank you all so much again, Miss Connie, for inviting me in. And I would love for you to talk about your little story before I go. I cannot not listen to your story about the milk.
Oh, well, as you know, I don't know if you know it like this, but there was a young man who didn't have any money. He couldn't afford to finish schooling or anything. So he walked from house to sell. One day he stopped at somebody's house and a beautiful young lady came out and she asked for just a glass of water. She looked at him and he looked so very hungry and starved that she decided that she would bring him more than a water. She brought him a glass of milk. Several years later, she got sick. Older woman now. She got sick, went to the hospital, and when they told her the cost of the surgery, she couldn't afford it. They went ahead and they had to do the surgery. And when they took the bill to her and she was like scared, what am I going to do? When she looked at it, she saw where it said paid in full. It was that this bill was handed to her by a young man. It said on there, paid in full with a glass of milk. When she looked up, she saw the same young man that she had given that glass of milk to many years ago. So do good and it will come back to you. Whatever it is, this young doctor might be going through his struggles and he wants to specialize in being an orthopedic surgeon. So you never can tell when your bones will get broken. They're all getting older, and the older you are is the more susceptible we are to the breakage. So this fine young man will be the one to set your bones. So please, if you're out there and you're listening, make your donation to Maurice's Fleetwood, Dr. Maurice Fleetwood, his GoFundMe account. Thank you so much. Chris, I want to thank you for a brilliant interview. Thank you very much for coming in and sharing with us this afternoon, and we'd like to invite you back again another day. Okay? So we'd like to...
Thank you very much for the radio show and everyone.
Okay. You're welcome. So I'm going to play something for Queen Majesty. Thank you, come again. Thank you, Dr. Ev. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
No, you did.
I love you too. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.